When we decided to go see a rocket launch, I thought, you know, somehow we would get to stand sort of close to it.
You know, like on TV, you see the rocket towering above you and all the flames and the smoke.
And billowing smoke everywhere, right?
But of course, the rocket people made us stand miles away.
It makes sense. They took us on this old converted school bus down a little dirt road. And then they let us out in the middle of nowhere. It's a field of scrub brush. The Pacific Ocean is off in the distance. The only sign of civilization is a couple of blue porta potties, just in case.
But somewhere just over the ridge is one of humanity's greatest achievements.
Right?
A rocket. It is called the Minotaur C. It is 100 feet tall. And it is the rocket we have been waiting to see for the last 8 months.
It's worth $40 million. It's carrying a bunch of very sophisticated satellites. But everyone stands around and acts like, oh, this is no big deal. One of the executives from the rocket company, John Steinmeier, he makes it sound routine.
It's been a long period of time where we've worked with the customer to integrate their satellites onto our launch vehicle, make sure everything's compatible and everything will work well once they're deployed.
You use all these words like vehicle, but that's like a rocket.
If rocket is more exciting, we can call them rockets.
Rocket's definitely more exciting than vehicle.
But in the space business, boring is good. That's what they're going for. Boring means that the customers are all happy and there is no embarrassing video footage of a rocket exploding over our heads.
The only drama out here comes over a set of walkie-talkies. That is the only way we know what's going on.
LC, vehicle, FTS internal voltage and current are nominal. Can I copy that, vehicle?
Nominal is our favorite word.
What does nominal mean?
Everything is okay.
Nominal?
Yeah.
That is, I think, the most sort of calm. If there's a word that is calmer than nominal, I've never heard it.
So if someone says it is non-nominal?
Probably off-nominal.
Off-nominal?
Off-nominal. That means big trouble.
It means run.
It means it's not nominal.
But we were excited. We were taking selfies. We'd snuck in a bottle of champagne. Because this might be nominal for everybody else. But for us, this might be the single biggest moment in Planet Money history.
Because just over that horizon, on top of the Minotaur C rocket, is the Planet Money satellite. It is a little hunk of technology that we have adopted, that we have been following for months. We've even etched the waveform of our voices on the side of the satellite. If this actually works, Planet Money is going to space.
1 minute, it's 1 minute, it's 1 minute.
I mean, weirdly enough, like I'm most afraid that it's just going to be boring.
No.
That I'm not going to be able to see anything.
The ground's going to rumble.
Wait, why are you whispering?
Because he keeps holding his finger up silently.
T-minus 10 seconds. Mark.
Oh, my God.
It's happening.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Robert Smith.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
Today on the show, we boldly go where no podcast has gone before. Space.
A decade ago, this crazy stunt, a Planet Money satellite, would never have been possible. Space was so expensive that only governments and corporations could afford to launch a satellite.
But everything is changing in the space business right now. Private rocket companies are driving down the price of launches. Satellites have shrunk so much, you can hold them in the palm of your hand.
It's becoming so easy, even we can do it.
So over the next few episodes of Planet Money, we're going to try to make sense of this new industry by going to space ourselves. Getting a satellite took us from rural Kentucky to Silicon Valley to New Zealand.
And there are so many things that can go wrong. I mean, can you really build a working satellite on the cheap?
And even if you do, what can the satellite do in space? And even if you come up with a mission, what if after all this work, the rocket just disappears off the radar?
We have negative telemetry in the center here. I was just hoping you could confirm the track of the vehicle via radar.
That means they've lost contact with it, I think.
Everybody's waiting. Everybody's crowded around that walkie-talkie.
Can work.
Psst. Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Casper. Designed, developed, and assembled in the U.S., your Casper mattress is delivered right to your door in a small, how-do-they-do-that sized box. Get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/planetmoney and using promo code planetmoney at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Casper. Start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper.
Okay, we have to be honest with you. The Planet Money satellite started out as a joke around the office. About 8 months ago, we were brainstorming new projects. You may remember that Planet Money already made a T-shirt and followed it around the globe.
We did a project where we drilled for oil and turned it into gasoline.
And we're all joking, oh, you know, what's next? You know, space? Our editor, Brian, had just seen something about a SpaceX launch on the little news TV that's in our elevator. And we all laughed. And, you know, I immediately started to sketch a mission patch. You know, every space mission has a patch for its jumpsuit. So I'm like, oh, if we ever did this, you know, we could put a squirrel on it and our names on the mission patch.
And we were all excited and talking about it, but it seemed really impossible. I mean, first of all, we obviously weren't going to get on a rocket.
No.
And even a satellite just seemed really out of our league. There are only a couple thousand active satellites in orbit, and they're almost exclusively owned by, like, spy agencies and governments and multi-billion dollar corporations.
And imagine what it takes to build one of these satellites. I mean, I didn't know this before, but they are huge. The kind of satellites that provide GPS for our phones or cable TV or predict the weather, those satellites can be as big as a school bus. They're so complicated, so expensive, they can cost $500 million.
But one of our producers, Elizabeth Kulas, was really captivated by this, and she decided to look into it. She came back super excited.
And she said, well, wait a minute, Elizabeth, come in here. What did they tell you?
They said it is actually the perfect time to go to space. We are in the middle of a satellite revolution. These satellites are getting smaller and cheaper, and it's easier to get to space. It's like the early days of personal computers or when the internet was invented. It is wild out there right now, and we can get in on it.
I still wasn't completely sure that it was possible, but, you know, I thought, fine. We'll get a guide, maybe someone who can show us a possible way into this industry. And everyone kept talking about one person in particular, apparently the Steve Jobs of the satellite revolution. He was a guy who showed the world that anyone could go to space. He works in Kentucky. His name is Bob Twiggs. When we first spot Professor Twiggs, he is surrounded by third graders.
A few kids run around.
It is field trip day at the Space Science Center at Morehead State University.
I think you ought to interview them. They're our future graduate students.
That's true.
Bob has white hair, and he waves his hands around with excitement. Maybe it's the kids, but he reminds me of one of those owl characters in a Disney film.
As an early pioneer in satellites, he could be running a billion-dollar corporation. But he decided to stay in academia, and instead what he does is get students excited about space.
It's kind of like jump-starting a car, you know. I think I'm like the guy with the battery pack on my back, and I go around to the students, and I jump-start the students. And once they get running, then I can stand out of the road, and they learn more on their own than I can teach them.
And that is how Bob changed the satellite industry. In the late 1990s, he was teaching graduate engineering students at Stanford, and he figured they would be way more excited about designing satellites if they actually got to build one in class. But with something as big and as complicated as a satellite, this was a tough assignment.
The bigger it is, the more things that they want to put in it, and they just keep designing, oh, we can add this and we can add that.
Bob was working with another researcher from a university down the road, Cal Poly. His name was Jordi Pujshwari. And they thought, what if they give the students a constraint, a tiny box they had to fit all of the electronics into so it would go faster? So he goes down to a store in Mountain View, California, one of those places like a container store.
You know, they sell all kinds of boxes, you know, that you're going to put your favorite baseball in or your favorite basketball.
Oh, so you were walking up and down the aisles saying,
right.
too big, too small,
that's
too small.
Right. That's right.
And then you saw?
I saw a 4-inch box. And that at the time, you know, there was the Beanie Baby craze. So that was the box that they put the Beanie Babies in. You know, you'd get a Beanie Baby and display it on the shelf. So this satellite started from a Beanie Baby box.
Luckily, Bob did not call his invention a Beanie Baby satellite.
Never name your technology after a fad.
Instead, he called it the Cube Satellite, CubeSat.
the CubeSat. And the original CubeSat is inside the trophy case at Morehead State University. Bob's boss, Ben Malfrus, drags us over to see it. He is so proud of this dusty plastic cube.
And this is a great opportunity because the original model, I predict one day, will be in the Smithsonian.
And Bob puts this box in front of his students and says, anything you want your satellite to do has to fit in here. You can't add more parts, make the satellite bigger. You students, you have to think smaller.
The general aerospace industry said that's the dumbest idea we've ever seen. Those academic guys are out of their mind because it's so small, it's not useful for anything.
Remember, the aerospace industry was sending up satellites the size of a bus. And here is this researcher holding up something a little larger than a Rubik's Cube and saying, this is satellite two. It didn't make any sense.
This was not an evolution to a slightly smaller product. This was a revolution. And everything about what was inside of a satellite had to be rethought.
And this might have stayed an academic exercise for the fine students at Stanford, except there was this other revolution going on at the same time. This was the early 2000s, and very early smartphones were just being invented. And all those tiny phone transmitters and processors and cameras just happened to fit into a Beanie Baby box.
All of a sudden, satellites were so small that students could take risks. They could try new things. They could design a tiny satellite to take pictures of the Arctic or measure magnetic waves to predict earthquakes.
And when you take risks with a new technology, that's when business innovation happens. The personal computer revolution didn't start when computers were the size of an entire room. It started when computers were small enough to play around with, to take risks with in a garage. That's how Apple started. The same with satellites. Private companies looked at this and they said, oh, I can think of a million things to do with a CubeSat.
Bob remembers visiting a company recently in San Francisco called Planet. They make satellites that take pictures of the Earth, and they have almost an assembly line process now for making CubeSats.
It's fun to go in there and see a shelf with 50 satellites sitting on it. Never thought I'd see that.
How long would that have taken you back in the day?
Oh, my. At the rate we were building them, almost 50 years.
Bob told us, look, it's pretty easy. Like, even a podcast could build their own cube satellite. They do make kits for this. And you could probably make something that, you know, goes beep, beep, beep in space for, you know, under $10,000.
And, you know, beeping in space, that's cool, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's better than beeping on the ground.
It's like Sputnik.
But I kind of thought we'd have a satellite that could do something cool, like take pictures of North Korea or track cargo ships or monitor global warming.
Yeah, for that level of satellite, we're going to have to make some difficult decisions. We're going to need to go shopping for our very own CubeSat. There is apparently a Walmart of satellites. It is the Small Satellite Conference in Logan, Utah.
Like Small Satellite Conference or Small Satellite Conference?
The satellites are small. The conference is massive.
Oh my God, it's a robot. It's a robot. I think it's a robot.
Once upon a time, the Small Satellite Conference was for academics. Scientists who were building hardware and data analysts, and they are still here, and a lot of students too. But these days, you can smell the money in the air. The big rocket companies are here, SpaceX, Blue Origin, Rocket Lab. And every 20 feet, you can stop by a booth of some startup satellite company, giving away little light-up keychains and foam rocket ships.
And Bob's tiny CubeSats are everywhere. It is an industry standard now. You can get a single box. It is called a 1U, as in one Beanie Baby unit.
So just this basic...
Just the basic setup.
Just this basic thing I'm holding in my hand. It's like a frame with some electronics in it.
Yeah.
Is $10,000.
Right.
Very doable.
Right.
Of course, then you have to fill up the CubeSat. There are booths that will sell you powerful cameras, radiation monitors. Mike Creech at the booth for Millennium Space Systems says it could get expensive.
You have to have power. You need some sort of computer. You need a way to navigate, know where you are in space, in the sky. And those things just take time to develop, and every single mission is unique.
In that case, you might want to upgrade to a 3U satellite.
Ooh.
As in three Beanie Baby units.
Yeah. And the booth for the company Blue Canyon has a bunch of cool, shiny floor models. So I asked Dan Hagel,
if we wanted your basic model, like you're just your cheapest stripped down box with some electronics, what range of cost are we talking about?
Our equipment is probably the highest end that you're going to find in this category. But it's still a fraction of a price of a traditional spacecraft.
You want to drop the sticker price on me? What's it going to be?
I don't know if I should say that. Well, let's say well under a million.
Under a million.
Yeah.
You can hear our producer, Elizabeth, laughing out loud at that price tag.
I mean, compared to the $500 million communication satellite, these are a bargain. But we were thinking maybe more in the, like, thousands or hundreds of dollars range.
You know, I actually talked to them about a used satellite, and they looked at me like I was crazy. Like, where are you going to find a used satellite?
eBay. It's always on eBay.
You know, I figured we could always play the nonprofit card, you know, the sort of charity impulse. So, you know, we started to talk to people at the conference about who might lend us a satellite, you know, for journalistic purposes, allow us to adopt one for a short mission.
We called everybody who makes satellites saying, hey, do you have an extra satellite? Can we jump on board with your satellite?
We begged.
Could we maybe just put our name on a satellite? Maybe do something cool with it?
And one company said, let's talk about it. Why don't you drop by our office? It's in San Francisco, and we can discuss this proposal. It was, in fact, the company that Bob Twiggs had mentioned that he visited in San Francisco, the company with the strangely similar name to ours, Planet.
I felt like this was a good sign.
It's open.
Oh, thanks. Planet's San Francisco office is right down the street from the headquarters of Twitter and Uber, and they're going for the same tech startup vibe. Although, because it is space hardware, I have to sign a promise not to steal any military secrets.
Confidential information shall mean any technical, non-technical.
Like my Apple terms of service contract, I did not read the fine print, signed it anyway, and now I can legally enjoy my tour. It starts in Mission Control with the launch director, which sounds way more serious than it is. Mike Safian is 29 years old, pretty laid-back guy. And Mission Control looks like the back of a Best Buy, a bunch of TVs on the wall and hardware piled on the desks.
We have satellites lying around everywhere.
There's like four or five of them in a cabinet here.
Yes, and that's just for starters. So there's another cabinet full of satellites over there.
Now you're just showing off.
Yeah, well.
The reason they have so many is that Planet's business model is changing the way we take pictures of the Earth. I mean, we've all seen those satellite photos on Google Maps, right?
Everyone checks their house.
And those pictures were taken by big satellites that basically only get a good shot of your house every 6 months or a year.
But Planet thought, hey, with all of these little CubeSats, why wait for one big satellite to trundle by? Why not launch hundreds of small ones? Build them faster, launch them faster, take more risks. It's the CubeSat way. Mike shows me a TV in back with an image of the Earth. And you can see all these little dots, you know, maybe 200 of them. Each one is a satellite that Planet has in orbit.
Over Hawaii, Alaska, over the North Pole, mm-hmm. You have a big string of satellites going down over the United Kingdom, looks like through France, Spain, through
each one
Morocco,
of those little satellites Ghana, is up in space, 300 miles up. And they whip around the globe from the North Pole to the South Pole, then back to the North Pole again every 90 minutes, taking pictures the whole way. North Pole, South Pole, North Pole, South Pole. If you could float in space and see it, it would look like...
what would appear to be like a string of pearls going over roughly the North Pole from north to south. And as the string of pearls is rotating in its orbit, the Earth is rotating underneath. And so that line of satellites acts as a line scanner. And so they're slowly sweeping across the Earth's surface every 24 hours. And that enables us to get an image of every place.
A picture of almost every place on Earth every 24 hours. The way it works is that no matter where you are on Earth at around 10 o'clock in the morning,
when you're just getting coffee,
there is almost certainly a tiny Planet satellite whizzing by over your head.
And taking a picture, it is mind-boggling. And, you know, when Planet first started to launch its satellites a few years ago, they would name each one and have these big ceremonies. Now they have so many, it is totally routine. So routine, would a company like this even notice if a public radio podcast just, you know, borrowed a satellite for a little while?
Maybe we could push a couple tote bags their way?
And so we asked, can we have one? I mean, not to keep, you know, just to borrow it for a little while. Like, no money changing hands, no contract, just a sort of temporary adoption situation. And some calls were made up the management chain, and they said, how about satellite 0 F1C? I went down to the lab to see it.
Okay, so welcome to the factory. We need to put on coats, but we can help you with that.
And finally, I meet someone who's recognizable from all of the space exploration movies. The guy who builds the satellites is wearing a bow tie and a lab coat. His name is Chester Gilmore.
And this is Planet Money's satellite.
This is your adopted spacecraft, so they tell me.
I don't know what to say. I mean, it's gorgeous. Look, it's shiny. Oh, okay, so how do you normally describe the size of this?
About the size of a loaf of bread.
Or, you know, maybe a shoebox for, like, ballet slippers.
Yes, very, very nice, elegant, handcrafted, very capable ballet slippers.
Just two dudes talking about ballet slippers.
It happens. I mean, technically, this is a 3U. That's three Beanie Baby boxes. It is the direct descendant of Bob Twig's trip to a container store.
Can I pick it up?
Yes. Yes.
You paused for a moment there.
Well, yeah, because this is actually going to go into space. So anywhere else, they would probably tell you absolutely not. You can never pick up a satellite. But yes, you can pick up the satellite. I'll ask you to pick it up like this.
I was just allowed to touch the edges, and when I pick it up, it is super dense. You know, like picking up a baby, okay?
Okay. And if you break it, you buy it.
Joking, Chester says, kinda. These things are pretty tough. He tells me this story about one time when they were launching a rocket with these little CubeSats in it, and the rocket blew up. It blew up after launch, and satellites just like this one rained down all over the beach.
And we turned them on, and they all worked.
Chester opens up the metal casing and he shows me inside. There's lots of little gold parts, but basically it's a big camera. Like one of those cameras with a giant lens you see on the sidelines of sporting events. And all around the lens is the electronics. There's a little antenna to send the photos back to Earth. Little gizmos that allow you to turn the satellite, steer it a bit.
Chester says you can put together the whole thing in about 4 hours.
Amazing.
Can go from assembly to testing to space in a matter of months. And that's the key to this whole new space business.
The idea is to move fast and to innovate quickly. They basically treat satellites like, you know, like iPhones, right? They release a bunch into space. And then, you know, months later, they come up with redesigns and updates. And they launch some more and then some more and then some more. The satellites go up quick. And then after a few years, they start to burn up.
Yeah, Chester says one day you'll be looking at a photo from a satellite and you'll notice that the images of the Earth are getting closer and closer and closer.
So the first thing that happens is our imagery gets better because we're closer.
It's a good news, bad news situation.
It's a good news, bad news situation. Yeah, it's like you're talking to it the whole time it's going, you could be talking to it the whole time it's going down.
And the Earth gets closer and closer, the images get better and better, and then... doesn't actually make that noise.
No, but we all make the noise quietly.
Is there like
and
a...
And then we raise a glass.
The death of a satellite is treated as a kind of celebration because it allows Planet to replace that satellite with a better one, with more features.
Even if we manage to get little zero F1C, the Planet Money satellite, into space, it is not going to have long to live.
So we have to make the most of its short, beautiful life. And Chester lets me in on a little secret. Making a satellite is pretty straightforward. Figuring out how to get it into space and what to do with it once it's there, that part is more complicated.
Next time on Planet Money, what can you do with a brand new satellite? What are all these new companies with billions of dollars worth of tiny spacecraft even doing in the sky above our heads?
What will be the mission for Zero F1C?
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Bose. Enjoy your podcasts any way you want with the Bose QC35 wireless headphones too. You'll be free from noise and free from wires. To learn more, visit bose.com/planet. Bose, get closer.
Any thoughts on what Planet Money's little zero F1C satellite should do? Send us an email, planetmoney@npr.org. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook.
And I'll be posting some behind-the-scenes photos of our satellite adventure on my Instagram. I'm @Radiosmith. And Stacey, I should warn our listeners that my original dream became a reality.
A beautiful reality.
Lay your eyes on the Planet Money space mission patch.
Oh my gosh, that is a really sharp looking patch. You've got the squirrel holding a little microphone and our satellite. There's zero F1C and a little astronaut.
Of course, our logo is on there. We'll tell you how to get one in a later episode.
Today's episode and this entire series was produced by Elizabeth Kulas with an assist from Nick Fountain. Alex Goldmark is our supervising producer. Brian Erstadt edits the show.
Special thanks today to our friends at Auburn University, Jam Wurzinger and Michael Fogel. Also thanks to Michael Stonecipher, Matt Kraft, Rachel Holm, and Trevor Hammond, who helped set things up with Planet.
I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
And I'm Robert Smith. Thanks for listening. We have to figure out what we're going to write on the side of our satellite.
Oh, okay.
So we can draw something. We can put the name of the craft.
Sky's the limit.
Sky's the limit.
Anything at all?
I thought you were saying that's the title.
It's not a terrible title.
Sky's the limit, yeah.
But we should ask people on the team.
We should ask everyone.
Oh, some sort of phrase, some sort of inspiring phrase, like to the stars, per ardua ad astra, through difficulty to the stars.
What is this?
It's a Latin phrase, per ardua ad astra, through difficulty to the stars.
Where'd you get this from?
It's the state motto of Kansas, but it is also my personal motto for many years now. I know,
okay,
I know.
So write that in there, right?
Okay.
I was just coming up with names.
Oh, yeah,
and
just
phrases.
Yeah.
The Starship Free Enterprise.
Good. That's a good one. Maybe productivity rising.
Productivity rising. Globalization and beyond.
It literally goes around the earth every 90 minutes.
And beyond.
And beyond.
Capital flight.
Oh, capital flight's not bad.
That's clever. No such thing as a free launch.
Free launch is not bad.
Small sat big data.
I like how you translated that.
PM3CPO. I will burn up.
I like that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe instead of I will burn up, maybe it's money to burn.
Money to burn.
Nice.
Okay. Money to burn. And then I'm going to write money to burn on it.
Okay. So, Stacey, this is what I'm afraid of, which is we came up with like a bunch of good jokey names.
Yeah.
But do we really want to say them for like four episodes?
Right. Puns, they can lose steam quickly.
You would know.
Yeah, I would.
So I'm thinking we should go with something simple, something classic.
Okay.
I want to lay this on you. Pod One.
I like it. Pod One. It's got a lot of potential.
Oh, God.
I think you just ruined
it. I'm sorry. You came to the wrong person.
I think you ruined it.
I did not.